Coming up on this week's episode of Check Your Balances, we talk about whether a signing bonus for a new brokerage account is really worth it and complain about a few things. Stick around, that's coming up.
Check Your Balances is a show produced and owned by Kraftwerk Capital. The views expressed by the hosts and their guests are personal opinions and should not be considered personal financial advice or the opinion of Kraftwerk Capital. All investments have risk and may lose money. Consult with your financial advisor, tax preparer, or attorney prior to implementing anything discussed, and please do not use this show as the sole basis for financial decisions.
Welcome back to another week of Check Your Balances. I am Ross Anderson, joined as always by my friend and co-host, Dan Maseca, who doesn't have his pink guitar up in the background. You sitting there playing it? What's going on, Dan?
Yes, I was. I was also very aware that it was blank back there and it was going to make a move to grab a guitar, but felt I would just keep it authentic for now and leave it the way it was when we hit record.
Au naturel. That's exactly how our show is. Just doing it live. That's what we do here now.
Doing it live.
Speaking of, I'm in like a horrible mood today. I don't like to be in a bad mood. I don't want to infect listeners of our show with my mood, but I am in a bad mood. I'm in a bad mood for one reason, but I think there's a little bit of salt in the wound. So driving my car earlier today, it essentially shut down. It didn't actually turn off, but all the lights, all the warning lights start flashing. And basically, when you step on the gas pedal, it wouldn't go. I was mid-intersection on two exceptionally large roads when this happened. Like 50-mile-an-hour roads. Like, not quite a highway, but not far from being a highway. I get it to coast a little bit and basically find a spot to pull off, but I essentially didn't trust it to drive it anymore. This is an under 3-year-old car. This is not like an old beater. This is a car that I bought brand new. And the salt in the wound is that in preparation to buy a house, I didn't want this car payment anymore. Oh. And so I have just sunk a meaningful 5-digit number of cash into paying off the loan. And then it's like it knew. It knew how much money I had just spent on it. And again, this is a loan. I get it. I had already bought the car. I was going to pay them this money at some point. I just did it recently. And it's like the car wanted to spit in my face and said, "You own me. Let's tell you what. Let me make sure you understand what you own."
Yeah. Do you regret it yet?
So irritated. Literally on the way to go see a house showing, by the way. I've got random appointments. But yeah, I'm trying to get to a house to go see. The car dumps me in the middle of functionally a highway. And then I had to have it towed to the dealership because I didn't trust it at that point. So I'm in a great mood, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's been a busy day, which is always good because it means you're in business. I've had a lot of meetings. In the background of all that, I've found my way onto a very odd text chain with five phone numbers that I don't have in my phone. I don't have anybody on this text thread listed. It's like five guys, apparently, and me. This is a very riveting episode. The first note goes, "Hey guys, anyone want to go to dinner tomorrow night with the kids when our wives go to dinner? I don't have the other dad's numbers." I'm like, what is this? And who are these people? I can't find the phone numbers. I ask Adrian. She doesn't have any of the numbers either. And I thought maybe it's like one of those odd texts that you get that fishes for information. But then the conversation has been continuing for the last 2 days and they're coordinating plans. And I still can't, even with all the new context I have, figure out what is going on and who these people are.
Have you said anything yet? Or you're just letting this happen?
I'm letting it happen. Part of me doesn't want to out myself as I don't know who you people are. And part of me is wondering if anyone else wonders who I am because they clearly know each other. They're local. They are in Maryland, but I'm... This is my entertainment for the day when I need a break from work.
I think the funnier move would be committing to the plans with them not knowing who you are and you not knowing who they are.
I'm going to do that right now.
It feels like we're coming up with a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, which I know is why you're doing this, is you're enjoying you're enjoying the chaos that ensues.
So it looks like they haven't finalized a location yet. Should I just jump in and say, what's the final word?
I think the better option is to recommend a restaurant. And it's got to be like universal enough that there's probably one near them. Uh-huh. Like, why don't we just do the Cheesecake Factory? Just throw a restaurant out there.
I'm going to say drinks at the Cheesecake Factory.
How about Olive Garden for old times?
All right. I'm going to do that.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
We should talk about something financial related because that's why people tune into our show.
Hitting send. Okay. I'll let you know if I get a response by the end of this conversation.
Dan, what's your impression of Robinhood?
Honestly, so the context of Robinhood comes in the wake of all that meme stock stuff from a few years ago.
We're talking about the broker, by the way, not the story.
Correct, right? Yeah. So the story of the broker of Robinhood, what comes to mind is pandemic era trading, meme stock frenzies, and all that. At this point, honestly, I view them much like almost any other brokerage. I feel like that history has
money
faded into the background. Right. It is a trading platform today.
Okay.
What about you?
So we've brought this up before that we can't figure out a way to do a show about this. This may end up turning into that show. But the thing about stock trading, of watching all the commissions go to zero, is that none of these companies that you trade stocks with have become nonprofits.
Fact.
That's the reality. Charles Schwab, Fidelity, E-Trade, Merrill Lynch, or you know, what's now Merrill Edge is part of Bank of America, Robinhood, the new ones, Webull, right? Not a single one of these companies does not want profit. And for some reason, I don't think anybody thinks, or very few people think, about what does that mean, right? And so we worked for many years with Interactive Brokers, who does charge a commission. They also now have a free platform. But mm-hmm. on their commission trades, their commitment was basically, we're not going to shop your trades. But with everybody else, if it's free, the reality is that they are probably shopping your trades.
Sure.
And right. I don't know that people know what that means.
So there are two factors there. Is what does it mean and does it matter to you? I think which are different questions.
Sure.
And might lead to different outcomes.
So what does it mean, Dan? If they're selling your trade, if they're receiving money, which the technical term for this is payment for order flow, what's actually happening in the background?
Yes. Yeah, so my understanding is they take the information and they say, hey, folks, here's what's getting ready to happen. Like, and selling that information to people who have like very sophisticated computers and are they basically like sending that information and executing trades through those kind of secondary Correct. Actors?
Yeah, I don't think it's even that they're selling the information. I think they're selling the order routing, right? They're saying, we're going to execute the order with you. Because there's kind of the broker, and then there's these pools of where the brokers come together to exchange stuff, right? So if you're on Schwab, and I'm on Schwab, and I want to sell one share of Vanguard Total Stock Market, I'm selling VTI, Schwab can do a couple things. They can sell it to you also at Schwab. You're a Schwab customer. You're trying to buy. Mm-hmm. Or they can basically take that order out into the world and there's like multiple places where they can execute it. So what's happening is people are paying the brokers like Schwab, like Robinhood, bring your order here. We'll take care of you because we want you to do the business here. Which is essentially like what Robinhood is now doing for consumers, which is offering them a bonus to do your business there. They're saying, we'll give you an incentive to bring your trading to us because when you do your trading there, they get paid for it. And that's what's happening with all of them. And these are disclosed fees, but you have to get really, really in the weeds to find them.
Right. By the way, I approve of this method. It's like, if I'm going to pay for marketing, why don't I just pay you to come over here and save myself the song and dance?
Sure. But you then have to market the message, which is the funny part. Right.
True.
Like, yes, you're paying for the marketing and then you're telling people that there's a bonus because otherwise we wouldn't know it. Now, thankfully, for their case, they generally have enough press pick this up. And the reason we saw it is that it was a Wall Street Journal article that your client, I think, flagged for you. And it basically said Robinhood is going after the rising rich.
Yeah. And they're going after people hard. I mean, they are providing very, very attractive bonuses to move brokerage accounts over. I think something to the tune of 3% for balance transfers and potentially bonuses on IRA contributions. They have a new credit card, I believe, that's also giving 3% cash back. So they're going at it aggressively.
We've talked about bonuses before because we talked about the Chase bonus, which was so funny to me. Like just going through it, when I got that $900 Chase bonus to open a savings account with Chase, bring the money there, and I think I had to hold it there for 90 days, and then they gave me my $900, and I immediately closed it. Like shortly after I got my bonus, I drained the account. I forgot about it for about, let's call it 2-3 weeks. And then I saw that Chase charged me a 12% fee because I stopped meeting the requirements. I stopped doing the direct deposit or whatever I had to do to meet the minimums. And I called and I said, okay, I'd like to close the account. And they did it pretty quickly. Now, there were a couple funny things in that call. Number one, the person I spoke to, and I called very pretty early in the morning. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning, my time, East Coast time, which is probably what they operate on. And he basically said, well, to close an account, I have to get you to our retention department.
Sure.
Which is exactly what that department was. They have a department of people there to save customers from leaving. But it was funny to me that he was like, yeah, I'm going to get you to the retention department. He told me exactly what these people's purpose is. I actually appreciate the transparency, but I don't think he was supposed to say that to me.
Yeah.
He tried, and the retention department didn't open until 9 a.m.
Oh, come on.
Which is hilarious. It worked out in my favor because then he went, oh, okay, I can just close it for you then.
Oh, so wow.
His process was supposed to be to send me to somebody that's going to make me some save offer. I never heard what that save offer was. And then I ended up canceling it. And it was the best way to do it. So I don't know if it was exactly 9 a.m. that that team opens up. But if you're trying to cancel a Chase relationship, call them early. Because then you don't have to talk to the retention department unless you wanted to hear what they were going to offer. Sometimes
I'm curious.
The offer is interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say there are numbers that they could have done to keep me. You want to run it back for round two? Another $900.
Yeah, another 90 days, another $900, and you got yourself a customer.
Yeah, no questions asked. I will shoot that money right back over.
But the funny part of it is the whole reason I was moving the money back away is the same reason they were offering the bonus. They wouldn't have to offer that bonus if they simply had the better product.
Also true.
I think that's true until it becomes really homogenous, which is why I think the Robinhood offer hits me a little bit different in my ear. Because, granted, Schwab is our main custodian. We also use Apex. So we've got two that we work with in our business, and there's a couple specific reasons we work for them. I'm talking about approaching this from somebody that doesn't have a professional relationship with these people, doesn't need their institutional trading desk services and run a firm like ours.
Yeah.
I don't think the consumer sees any difference between these brokers. And so the bonus becomes the only thing. It's easy to shop savings accounts. I know that the Chase savings account was bad because I know what I was making on my other one before I moved the money to Chase. So they had to overpay for my business, and then they were just hoping I was lazy enough to forget.
The reason they make those offers is because there are plenty of people who are.
Correct.
Otherwise, Bank of America wouldn't have any savings account holders, basically.
Yeah, they just wouldn't be necessary. You're just like, you didn't need that.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the biggest banks in the world, by the way. These are like the worst offenders of these sub-market products. Are literally the banks with the most money. So clearly, our show is not putting them out of business. B of A, doing just fine, not worried about the Check Your Balances podcast, throwing some shade their way on their sweet savings account product.
Right.
There's enough people that simply aren't paying attention to this. And I also think at a commercial banking level, by the way, this is a tangent, I'm sorry, everybody. At a commercial banking level, the size of the bank does matter. When you extend way, way, way above FDIC limits, this matters a lot. We're privileged to be able to not care about the size of the bank because we're small fish. Because the government steps in and gives us our money back if we played this game too aggressively and we found the Silicon Valley Bank of high interest savings. So we're protected in this game, but some corporation with $100 million at the bank, they are not. The strength of the bank, the security of the bank really matters at that level of playing the game. I get why that business might go to B of A.
Yeah. Now going back to Robinhood specifically, they are making very bold bonus incentives for people who come over. They also do have some fairly strict requirements to retain those bonuses in the form of like multi-year account commitments that you're going to keep your account there for, I think, perhaps up to 5 years if you're getting the transfer bonuses. But again, I think for the average person, you know, Robinhood is newer. It has the backdrop of that meme stock craze and may seem like a less than broker. I think we've touched on this in the past, but there are safety nets in place for people with brokerage accounts, and Robinhood has to conform to all those same safety nets as well. Like, I'm not worried that they're going to poof out of thin air. These are going to be my most famous last words tomorrow.
Please don't sue us, Robinhood. We're not saying you're going out of business.
No, you're right. I think people are good. And if you are in a position to take advantage of a situation like that and have a lukewarm like relationship with your broker and are open to a new one, you know, a 3% transfer bonus on a account that you've been saving into can be meaningful.
One of the things, and it's been a while since I looked at this, there is a form. This is going to be so granular, and I'm going to try and just do the simplest version of this, but it's called a 606. It's the Rule 606 disclosure form. And you can search this, and brokers have to publish this. And this is essentially the what do they get paid for sending an order to different clearinghouses. So I'm looking at Robinhood. This isn't the most recent one. This is their third quarter of 2022. And for S&P 500 stocks, they sent them to Citadel, Virtue Americas, and Jane Street Capital. Those are who they sent their orders to. 50% went to Citadel. 36% roughly went to Virtue, and the last 7 went to Jane Street. And this is where I've had an issue. So I'm going to take the worst one, which is actually their Virtue Americas. Net payment paid received for market orders. This is cents per 100 shares. 77 cents per 100 shares. So this is what Robinhood gets paid from Virtue Americas. The lowest one is Citadel, and that's where they do the most of their business. Is 27 cents per 100 shares. That's a weird metric. But what they actually received in dollars for the quarter from Virtue Americas, $185,000. Net payment for Citadel was $245,000. But then the further down into the form you get, where they really start to ratchet up what they make, is generally in non-S&P 500 stocks, in options, in things that are a little bit trickier. And not all of their trading is with the same company. I'm not going to read through all of these because we will lose absolutely everybody if we haven't lost you already. But that's what Robinhood was making just to send an S&P 500 stock to the market and get that routed, right? If we go back and we look at basically the same time period for Schwab, Schwab also does business with Citadel, Virtue Americas, a bunch of others. So Jane Street is on there. But the payment received for Schwab is 10 cents per 100 shares they send. 10 cents is what Schwab gets. This is why I've basically had a bias against Robinhood, is I think that they're essentially making 7x what Schwab is on their payment for order flow, which has to, in my mind, that has to relate back to some quality of execution, right? Why would somebody pay Robinhood 7 times as much to execute an order on their clearing platform versus what Schwab has to pay? Is it just Costco model, or is that a choice that the broker makes? Because I think that's a choice that Robinhood was making.
I think you might be right. And then, like I mentioned, the second question is, how does that impact Joe Schmo, me trying to buy 100 shares of the S&P 500? You know, maybe I get a 1 cent difference in execution, which rounds to zero over it. So,
or a 77 cent different execution on your 100 maybe, share, in theory, maybe. Right? That was the highest price. It was 30 right. cents on the other. And do you care if you paid 30 cents too much on 100 shares of stock?
But that's a huge spread. Like, I can see the current price of anything I want to buy and target that, right? Like it's not going to necessarily execute just at some random share price. Like, this is all public information now. It's not the old days where, you know, I needed to hand walk my little slip up to Wall Street and be like, hey, sir, please buy me shares of Coca-Cola. And whatever happens, happens. Like knowledge is instant. And I can see the bid-ask spread everywhere on any public site. Like, I'm not going to get hosed, I don't think. I mean, we should try this. We should try this.
I think it moves too fast to really test it, right? Unless you had supercomputers. But in theory, executing a trade at the exact same moment on Robinhood and on Schwab would be the only way to trade this. If you had an order management system or an order routing system, you could probably do it and do it with enough volume and enough times that you could see who's actually executing well or not. But yeah, that's really what it is. And specifically, it's on like a market order. A market order is by definition right. saying whatever the next trade price is, I'm willing to take it. Mm-hmm. And if it was completely out of bounds, it would get picked off. Somebody would arbitrage that. That's basically what's happening. But yeah, I don't know. I just look at this and I go, I don't know that I would do business with this firm. And I can't tell if I'm just being a snob.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. So on our level, as a institution that does trading for multiple people, potentially with wider blocks of trades, like, this becomes more important to us, right? Because now the difference in execution can be more meaningful than just a couple cents for one trade, which is going to become meaningless over time. But for one person looking to house their accounts, you know, I would be willing to accept that, you know, in the spirit of getting other incentives.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, your bonus could easily overcome the few cents you're going to lose on a trade.
Yeah.
You know what my real takeaway is? And this is going to be the world's least exciting takeaway.
What's that?
The more you trade in your account, the more somebody's in your pocket. The number of trades is directly related to how often and how much your pocket is being picked as an investor.
I think that is actually a very good takeaway. And then in other news, whoever's phone number on this thread ends with 1223 believes Olive Garden sounds delicious. So it sounds like a win.
What a way to wrap the show. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Next week, I believe we've got a guest. We hope we have a guest.
We're scheduled for a guest.
We're going to talk about valuation next week.
About business valuation.
Whether it's public or private. I'm excited for it. Tune in next week. We appreciate you. Check your balances at outlook.com is how you get a hold of us. In the meantime, we'll catch you guys next time.